Hello everyone and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 1 of Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today I have the honor and pleasure of speaking with Bobby Easton, a mutual friend who I met through John Hines from the Big Old Nasty Get Down. He's here to talk about his band Delta Nove, his musical journey, and also him being the curator for Long Beach Funk Festival. Please help me welcome Bobby. So Bobby, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us on Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music. Just kind of wanted to get my head wrapped around some of the projects that you've worked on, talk about your work with Delta Nove and also Long Beach Funk Festival, and just kind of understand your career track. And so I knew your work with Delta Nove through the keyboardist Fingers within the group, who I met through the funk jams with Lonnie Marshall. And I wanted you to tell us a little bit about Delta Nove, starting with your start in the mid-90s and kind of like how it all came to be.
Okay, so we're starting at the top. So Delta Nove started, you know, it wasn't Delta Nove when we first started. So I was in college at Cal State Long Beach. So I started as an art major. And then my interests and focus changed to anthropology and world music. So my intent was to actually go into studying ethnomusicology. So I was actually studying that, and I was minoring in music. So I was around the music department, and through that, I was meeting a lot of great musicians and friends that I forged relationships through music. So, you know, I had the idea of getting some people together and creating a band. My initial thought was to, you know, combine some of the music that had been really influencing me at the time. So I was like, what if we mashed up like Funkadelic and Frank Zappa and Thelonious Monk and, you know, kind of use that as a springboard to like start a band. So, you know, definitely didn't end up necessarily that way, but that was the initial idea. Got some friends together. So at the time we actually had three female singers and we called ourselves Fireball. So it hadn't become Delta Nove yet, so we were doing like, you know, covers of like old Funkadelic songs and other soul songs and, you know, starting to add in original songs. And we did a handful of shows as that band. Especially being in college, you know, getting close to graduating and whatnot, people's life takes them in different directions. So one of the singers, you know, she went to study abroad, and one of them went somewhere else, and the other one was kind of, her focus was somewhere else. So here we were as a band, and the three amazing female vocalists we had were off, like, you know, somewhere else. And I had been singing in the band, too, but they were definitely taking the lead in it. But with their departure, you know, basically out of necessity, I'm like, well, damn, I guess, you know, somebody's got to do the singing, so I guess I'm going to do it. You know, so from being primarily the guitarist and band leader and whatnot, you know, I started to take on the role of vocalist too. You know, with their departure, you know, well, let's change the name of the band. And then, you know, we became Delta Nove. So that was like the kickoff of like Delta Nove as we know it. And over the years, you know, this was back in the mid 90s. So over the years, especially with a large band, it's natural to see members come and go. So the band members have shifted over the years. I'm really the only original member of the band. Of course, to a lot of our fans' perspective, you know, they didn't discover us till much later. So some of the members of the band have been in it well over decades. So as far as I'm concerned, they're original enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I mean, definitely, I'm sure even if you look at like a Parliament, those players have come and changed into so many different reiterations of it over time. And I think that's just only natural. But there's always like some focal point or anchor to the group, such as yourself. So then the genre that you guys are considered is world funk, and it's an eclectic mix of funk, reggae, jazz, rock, samba, Afrobeat, all rolled into one. And I wanted to know, is that kind of done because of the diversity of the influences of all the players, building off of your initial concept of kind of being a hybrid of multiple people and crossing genres? Is that kind of how it came to be, or is there something else organically involved?
Each of the band members has really diverse taste in music, and you know, unlike a lot of bands where all the members are into the same thing, you know, we all, you know, go in different directions, but so we definitely all bring our various influences into our playing and our songwriting and whatnot. As far as like the world elements, I hate to like toot my own horn, but you know, they basically came from me introducing them into the band. I mean, I think a lot of us are into reggae music, so I think that was definitely an influence that came from different members. I've loved reggae music for decades, but it's like the Afrobeat. I got turned on to Afrobeat in, I believe, 91, when a friend of mine made me a cassette with Fela Kuti on it, and I loved it from the get-go. And you know, even from our very first album, had a lot of Afrobeat influence. When I was in college, I played in the steel drum orchestra, and you know, our original percussionist, he played the steel pan in the band, and we incorporated some of the soca and calypso elements. And as far as the Brazilian stuff, in college, they started introducing a Brazilian drumming, and that actually triggered a memory that, you know, when I was a kid, my dad had made a solo trip to Brazil, and he brought back a couple cassettes of Brazilian music, from samba compilations, which I still have those cassettes. And so it kind of like triggered that memory. And then also at the same time, Delta Nova was playing at this Brazilian club in LA called Zabumba. They were doing a acid jazz night there. And so we would play there. And, you know, we were doing our music, but I was at this Brazilian club, seeing Brazilian videos being shown on the screen, meeting the Brazilians that worked there and that came there. And this was at the same time, you know, that I started to learn Brazilian drumming. And, you know, I always had it in my mind that I wanted to go to Brazil. So shortly after, you know, I got the crazy idea to, like, you know what? Been thinking about it, I'm just going to go. So I decided to buy a ticket for a round trip for 3 months. Didn't speak Portuguese at the time, didn't really know anyone there, didn't know where I was going to go or what I was going to do, but I knew I was going to go big. So this was in 97, and it was just absolutely a magical, amazing learning and growing experience for me. So naturally, when I came back, you know, I came back with tons of Brazilian instruments and music and whatnot, and started to really throw that into our musical pot, you know, all the Brazilian influence. And so that's you know, how that seed got planted with the band too.
I think that everyone should kind of go out and explore the world as you did, going off to Brazil, doing study abroad, doing some type of immersion, to kind of understand the rest of the growing world around us, and being able to have those types of experiences. I was in France for a while, and then I did cruise ship music for about a year on Holland America Line. And I just felt like all of those experiences kind of opened my eyes and ears to new things, and just listening to different styles of music. You kept mentioning that you received or had these cassette tapes, which, for some of the listeners, they probably don't even remember what cassette tapes are or have cassette players.
Right.
I have one, and I have one kind of those zip packs of some old cassettes that I keep, and I listen to them occasionally. But vinyl made a resurgence. Cassettes did not, but maybe one day the nostalgia of cassettes will come back. I know that Fat Beats still sells them, and some other distributors. So I guess someone still makes cassette tapes now. But
yeah, some people are trying to like go with that old school thing and release albums on cassette. But I don't know. I don't think it's gonna have the same effect. But yeah, man, I still got a whole bunch of cassettes still, and I got a ton of records. I don't think records are ever gonna go away.
No. I think it's just like someone else who was on the podcast was explaining, records are not just a format, they're an experience. You know, you sit down with your beer and you read the artwork and you listen to a whole side, and you just have a different type of experience than you do with CD and even electronic digital music now. And so as we talked about all of the 8 releases that you have, you know, a lot of them being self-produced, but in your last album, Imaginary Conversations, you were able to work with other producers. Those producers have worked with Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stone and Eric Clapton, Adam Ant, and Warren Zevon. And, you know, being a big fan of Parliament, you got to work with George Clinton. And I have just always been curious to understand, like, what it is working with people of that caliber, and especially with George. Like, I mean, did he show up wearing his colorful wig? Like, did it feel like the mothership just landed in the studio, or how was that experience for you?
Yeah. Well, as far as those other influences on the album, you know, those guys, we brought those guys in. Our drummer at the time, our longtime drummer, he actually unfortunately passed away last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. But he was the one that made the connection with those guys. So they came in to produce one of the songs on the album, Why Are We Here? So that's where those guys came in. All of our albums have always been self-produced. So this was the first exception where we brought in an outside production element. So that was really cool, you know. And so I don't know if you'd be able to perceive the production difference by hearing that song, but that was the one that those guys worked on. And then the whole George Clinton thing, yeah, that was something on my radar for years and years. And, you know, that helped come about with my friend John Heinz. You know, we had met right around the time that I was concocting the idea for the Long Beach Funk Fest. And so, anyways, he had already worked with George, and he helped facilitate that. And, you know, I met with George, and, you know, he agreed to do it. And I was just like, what? No way. Is this really happening? And, you know, we set the date and time, and, you know, we're there at the studio getting set up, and I'm like, is he really going to show up here? Like, is this really happening? And sure enough, he rolls in, you know, with an entourage of P-Funk guys, and it was just an incredible studio experience, musical experience, learning experience for me. And yeah, it was just a unreal time for me in the studio. And yeah, I learned a lot from that. First of all, it was a weird juxtaposition having him come in as a guest, with himself being such a great, prolific songwriter and producer. And, you know, except the only difference here was he was coming as a guest on our album. So I found myself in the producer seat, you know, an awkward circumstance of telling George what to sing and how to sing it. You know, naturally, he, of course, was free to do his own thing on top of it, but, you know, largely giving him the direction on the song. Yeah, it was amazing, because I'd heard for years about the P-Funk style of constructing songs in the studio, and to experience that firsthand was really amazing.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, we had John on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling us a lot about his work with George, and it just sounds like a life-shaping experience. Who makes it into like an entourage with George? I mean, he has so many people from the P-Funk All-Stars and Parliament and Funkadelic.
Yeah, so this time he brought a handful of people that I had already known. You know, his son, Trey Lude, T-Nut, who sang vocals with Bootsy's Rubber Band and P-Funk for many years. Quaze, who was a vocalist during this period of time with P-Funk. Sheila, a.k.a. Amunka, who is one of the vocalists in Brides of Funkenstein. They were all in there, and so they were all part of what you hear on the album. And then the funny thing was that most people don't know is, you know, during the session, George got a call, and it was El DeBarge just calling to see what was up with George, and said, oh, I'm in the studio in Long Beach, come on down. So the next thing we know, El DeBarge is joining in on our album.
Wow.
So yeah, that was quite a crew.
Yeah, that definitely is an amazing crew. And then you've worked with a lot of these great funk people, including George, as you were producing the Long Beach Funk Fest, which is also something that John and Big Ol' Nasty Get Down were a part of. And I think it was one of the best of its kind, you know, being a purely funk festival. And I kind of just want to understand, like, how was it putting that all together and being kind of the curator for that? I mean, that's a beast of a project. And so what were, like, your key learnings and kind of interesting anecdotes or stories you can tell about that project?
Well, it's a long story, so I'll give you a shorter version. I could talk for days about this. You know, I'd only played in bands, you know, I'd put together shows and whatnot, but I certainly had never organized like a full self-contained show, let alone a festival. But I got the idea. I was thinking about when I see these things around the country called Funk Fest, and I'm looking at the lineup and I'm like, well, wait a minute, man, there's not too much funk on that lineup, or there's no funk on it. Why are they calling these things funk festivals, you know? Then I start, you know, looking at the funk festivals of the past, you know, like they had at the Coliseum and whatnot, and, you know, had the top bands of the time, you know, Parliament Funkadelic, Bootsy, Rick James, you know, all these bands on these lineups when they were really like selling out stadiums and whatnot. I'm like, man, like that would be cool to bring back like a real funk fest. But that's where the idea came from. And, you know, amazingly, I the stars had aligned and I met the right people to help facilitate that at the time in 2009. You know, having never done a festival, I was thinking, well, I think maybe it'll be a, you know, a really small thing. Maybe I'll get like 1,000, 2,000 people if I'm lucky. And, you know, having met the right people to help facilitate it, you know, the first year we did it, there was, you know, what we estimated between like 12,000 to 15,000 people that showed up for my first festival. And, you know, wow. that completely blew me away. But also to be able to successfully contact and book some of my favorite artists and like these great funk artists was just like, you know, just completely mind blowing, you know? You know, it was just mind blowing to even just be on the phone with some of them for the first time. Like, wow, I just talked to Leo Nocentelli from the Meters, man. I've always loved the Meters and I just talked to him, you know? And then, you know, we sealed the deal, got him playing on the first festival, and, you know, Mandrill, another legendary funk band, Don Silva from the Brides of Funkenstein. It was just like, wow, I'm like, it was like magic to be able to get in touch with these guys and also get them on the festival that I was putting on. And over the years, you know, I've continued to get great artists and, you know, many of whom I've either subsequently worked with in a musical setting or just have become friends with over the years. So it's, you know, I feel very blessed about that. And it's definitely changed my life in so many ways.
And what is it like kind of being elbow to elbow or being on the lineup with these kind of artists?
Oh man. I mean, it's a similar experience. Like, so many of the artists you just named, I had been listening to for years and they're big influences. And then to actually like be playing with them was just, you know, it was just an amazing experience. And it was very humbling, you know, to have my own band being on the bills with these artists. So I'm like, wow, we must be doing something right, I guess, you know. So to be rubbing elbows, if you will, with these guys and playing with them was just, It was an amazing experience, you know. Every time something like that happens, you know, I really try to really be filled with gratitude over it, you know. You know, to have it keep happening is just, it's amazing. I love it.
and I mean, who wouldn't? And so is there anyone you have not shared the stage with or worked with that you would like to in the future?
Oh, yeah. You can go on and on about this. You know, one of the artists, well, it was actually a handful of artists that I had been looking forward to booking for the Funk Fest. And, you know, they unfortunately passed away before I had the chance to. You know, one of them being like one of my biggest influences, Chuck Brown. the Godfather of Go-Go.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was, you know, I'm not in front of my computer. I'm blanking on the date, but I believe it was 2012. I was in touch with his management, and we were negotiating about booking him for the Funk Fest, and, you know, which is, you know, fairly unprecedented because, you know, Go-Go is such a regional style of music to the D.C., Baltimore, you know, area. And not a lot of people are really hip to Go-Go music beyond that. But I was ready to book him and bring him out here because I know, like, when people hear it, it's going to resonate with people. So we were actually in negotiations to book him, and then he fell ill, and, you know, we had to put the negotiations on pause. And then shortly after that, he passed away. That was pretty devastating, you know. So that's one that I would have loved to book or play with or anything, but I didn't have the chance to.
I'm so glad that you know about that. I'm from Washington, D.C., so I grew up with Chuck Brown on the radio on WPGC when they flip it over to Go-Go at night. And my dad was in the Go-Go band back in the 80s. I mean, I think, you know, it stems from funk. I don't know why it didn't spread as much as other styles of music. I think, you know, EU with the butt hit the top 20 from Spike Lee. That's probably the biggest Go-Go. I think Jill Scott used a little bit on her first album. And I hear snippets of it here and there. But I think, you know, even if you're just looking at something like Chuck Brown Bustin' Loose, I feel like that's as funky as you can get. The late 70s and then beyond. And, you know, he did a lot of jazz stuff, and you know, he kind of helped bring out Ava Cassidy. I don't know if a lot of people know that, and they did an album together until, so I mean, literally the last album that came out, The Block Party, being a sleeper kind of R&B hit, covering sampling George Benson on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. And that album was great, man. I'm a huge Go-Go head, man. Like, it's a weird thing, you know, being a Southern California born and raised boy, you know, but, you know, as soon as I heard it, I just got completely sucked into it. So I'm like a huge fan of like Trouble Funk, Northeast Groovers, Rare Essence, Junkyard Band, Backyard Band, you know, all these bands. And, you know, I definitely wanted to bring something out. And after, losing Chuck Brown, I'm like, well, let's see if I can get Trouble Funk, because they're still playing, you know. They're like, like us, they've lost members and whatnot, but they're still doing it. So I was in touch with them, and I was trying to bring them out, and unfortunately it just proved to be too expensive to bring such a big band out from the East Coast, you know. Ended up not happening. I'd still love to somehow bring these guys out here. Yeah, Go-Go's a huge influence. And there's so many other artists that I would love to work with. I mean, there was artists on the radar that I wanted to bring for the Funk Fest. And, you know, we either lost them. I always thought it'd be great to, maybe it was lofty aspirations, maybe one day bring Prince out here. But, you know, we lost him. And, you know, like numerous artists like that. But, yeah, I mean, like beyond the funk world, like there's so many artists I'd love to work with still, Brazilian artists, you know, I've gotten to play with some of them, but yeah, the list can be long, but you know, I'm just, the beautiful thing about music is like, you never know enough. There's always more to learn. And, you know, in the same way, I'm always ambitious to collaborate with different people. And so, you know, I'm going to keep it going. Even with this pandemic going on, still finding ways to work with people remotely. One of the things was I was ready to do a recording with Dennis Coffey, and it was right before the pandemic hit. Me and John were actually, we had flights booked to fly out to Detroit and like work with them out there, but the pandemic hit and we had to cancel the whole thing. So yeah, there's countless artists that I'm still looking forward to working with, hopefully, you know, before they're gone. You know, life is so fleeting, you never know.
Dennis Coffey, to me, has always been an anomaly. I know they talked about him in the Black Godfather movie and that guy that kind of brought him out in the 70s. But when you look at him, you would never think that music would come out of that guy. But I feel the same way about Edgar Winter Group and those groups too, but amazing the work that they've done. And we definitely want to continue using these people and working with these legends and having them out while they're still with us and celebrating their body of work and that they're still doing it. You know, I love those people like Chuck Brown that are just doing it literally up until they can't do it anymore. I think that's how most of us will be, just because it's so much a part of you and in you and your DNA that you kind of have to do it, whether, you know, you're playing in front of five people or 500,000 people. I feel like it's still, if it's part of you, like you have to do it.
Yeah, man. It's like our life mission.
So then what advice would you give someone that was just starting out, either someone starting their own band or starting to play or starting a big project like the Funk Festival? Like, what would you say to them?
First thing that comes to mind is, you know, starting my band, Delta Nova, you know, we'd always done everything self-produced and, you know, we were never affiliated with a label or anything. And, you know, we did pretty well with it. And, you know, we were playing on a lot of festivals around the country. We're touring all around the country. You know, we're doing up to, like, at our peak, we're doing like something like 250 shows a year. And, you know, at the same time, I was looking at some of my friends that were playing with these big acts and, you know, like on the tour bus or like doing these fly dates and, like, you know, and I'm like, man, like these guys are like more big time than us. You know, they're like doing all these great things. But looking back, you know, I've seen a lot of my friends like that, you know, lose these gigs because ultimately they're someone else's sideman, you know. Even though they're like touring around the world and doing like huge gigs. Now, I'm not knocking people that are sidemen, because I take a lot of sideman gigs myself and there's nothing wrong with that. But as far as like fulfilling your vision as an artist, you know, I've seen these guys that are on these great gigs, but having the rug pulled out from under them, like losing these gigs because they're, you know, a sideman. Then, you know, as the year has progressed, I realized that the approach that we had done was more empowering and gave us more ownership of our body of work and just our work in general. And also, since the music industry has shifted a lot, it's really empowered individuals more than people that are working with major labels. So that's that do-it-yourself method, I think, is something that is a great thing to cultivate as an artist, anyone that's getting started. And yeah, now we have so many of the tools at our fingertips, you know, we don't need to go to a big studio to record. You can get a great home studio on the cheap and be making great quality recordings. You know, you don't need a major label to promote because you have all this social media at your fingertips, you know? So that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, as an artist to like really learn the skills yourself and learn to do as much of it as you can, or at least be aware of it and understand how it works to empower you as an individual to, you know, have more control and ownership over your work. As far as festivals, man, with this current pandemic, it's really turned the world upside down. And, you know, I've been wanting to bring back the Long Beach Funk Fest every year, you know, but for budgeting reasons, haven't been able to. But now with what's going on, it's like, who knows when we're going to have big festivals back again. You know, I feel like even when this pandemic passes, I think it's hard for any of us to see what the future is for events. But there's actually, you know, a lot of these large scale events have turned toward like free events, like instead, like there's a lot of, you know, big free concerts in downtown LA, you know, there's like these huge free concert series. So I think, you know, working with event production, there's a lot more resources to bring these events that are free to the public by, you know, working with like arts organizations or, you know, grants and whatnot. There's a lot of resources out there to learn more about that. That's what I would say as far as like anyone that wants to do events. But yeah, like I said, with the pandemic, who knows? It's going to be a long time. I think out of everything that's going to get back to normal, large festivals are going to be one of the last things, unfortunately.
Yes, I think so too. And so then as you are talking about the DIY and having home studios and recording remotely, will there be more music coming out from you or from the group?
Oh, yeah, man. We got so much stuff going right now. Like just this morning, I was working on two different mixes for two completely different projects. One of them with John and the Big Ol' Nasty Get Down, working with some like stellar musicians. And then I was doing another mix for a song that I recorded on with Ozo Motley. I was working on that mix this morning. And tomorrow, so Delta Nova, we've been, if you notice, our last album came out a really long time ago. So we've been recording for quite a while, and we have like two albums worth of music in the can. So like I mentioned earlier, you know, our longtime drummer and brother Dominic passed away just about a year ago, and we'd already recorded so much music with him. So we're just really working on finalizing this album. We're going into the studio tomorrow to track some of Fingers' parts on keys. So that's like 90-95% done tracking. So, you know, we just got to tie up some loose ends and get it mixed and mastered and get that out into the world. And I got like several other projects. I'm working on some of my own stuff, do a lot of Brazilian production with different artists around town. Some of the Brazilian bands I play with. So there's just tons of stuff. As you can see, it's I'm spread a little thin, you know, so it's a little slow on that process, but I'm really focusing on, you know, finalize them and finish them and put them out in the world. So that's really my focus right now, especially with my baby coming next month. You know, I'm really that's really putting a fire under me to get stuff finished and get it out there and clear up some bandwidth to get started on new projects.
Yeah, I mean, definitely sounds like you have a lot on your plate. So then for my final question, what do you want your legacy to be, or what do you want people to remember most about Bobby Easton and Delta Nova and the Funk Fest? Like, what do you want to be remembered for most?
I think just beyond, like with music and beyond, like I think integrity is something that comes to mind often, you know, when I think of my own character in music and just as a person in general. You know, like all the musical genres that I've touched on that we bring into our musical gumbo, if you will. You know, I try to do my best to really be as authentic as possible, you know, while at the same time doing our own thing with it, you know. So honoring and also honoring traditions, you know, with a lot of these funk masters that we were talking about earlier, and a lot of the Brazilian artists that I really admire, and just all the artists in general, you know, Fela Kuti, you know, all these influences, I try to really treat them with respect and honor the tradition of it. And then another thing that's really important to me is giving back. I always love to pass on words of advice to people, and in my work, you know, do things to give back to people as much as possible, which is a big part of this. We didn't even touch on this, but my new job that came up is I'm going to be running the Watts Conservatory in Music, which is going to be a music school in Watts, and we're going to be giving free musical instruction and free access to instruments to the community of Watts. So that is like, you know, really tying into what I'm saying here is like it's an amazing opportunity to give back to a community that really needs something like this to uplift the community that doesn't have a lot of these opportunities that other areas do. But yeah, those are really important to me in my music and just as a person. And that's something I hope translates, and I hope that I can continue to convey in what I do.
Awesome. Awesome. I think that's definitely a good way to leave it. I'm glad you were able to touch a little bit on that last project with Watts. I mean, anyone that's ever seen Watts Stack's documentary, I mean, would just be blown away. That I hope that something like that could happen again in the city of Watts. Just, you know, there's a lot of history there. And so, yeah, Bobby, thank you so much for just taking the time to be with us today and chat with us on Deeper Grooves. And we'll definitely circle back to you once it's out so that we can send you all the links and everything. But really great to hear your story and looking forward to hearing this new music once it's done.
Right on, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll have to chop it up with about Go-Go at some time in the future, too.
Yes, we most certainly do.
I can go on and on about that, too.
Oh, yeah, me too. I love to talk about it anytime.
Yeah, man. Right on. Well, you have a good day, and thanks again.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right.
Thanks again for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I'd like to thank our special guest today, Bobby Easton from Delta Nove, for coming and chatting about his project as well as the Long Beach Funk Festival. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios in Westlake Village, California for mixing and mastering this recording. If you like this and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until then, keep it funky.